Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone. Welcome to Where's Obama's Birth Certificate? I'll be hosting your show tonight. I'm Mona. Mike Boland could not be with us tonight. He's at an undisclosed location that I'm not at liberty to share. However, he might call in during the show, if we're lucky. If you want to get a hold of Mike, go to where'sobamasbirthcertificate.com, and his number is 570-394-2570. I'd like to also thank thebirthareport.com, and I'd like to thank Sharon Rondeau of Post Email, and I'd like to thank Ruth, my call screener tonight, who's helping me out, and I'd like to thank the listeners. And don't forget to call in tonight with your questions or comments. The number to call in is 347-989-8853. We will not take any unidentified numbers, so please call in with your number showing. Okay, we have a great show tonight. We have two awesome patriots and heroes who are, in my opinion, the next two governors in the state of Nevada and Michigan, David Lori Vanderbeek and Mark McFarland. But first, I'm going to bring on my co-host, David Frank, who has written a book called 300 Million Minds, Changing America, Piece by Piece. Dave, are you on?
I'm here. Can you hear me?
Hi. Yes, sure can. How are you doing tonight?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thank you. Why don't you go ahead and tell the audience a little bit about yourself, and then we'll get started.
Yeah, I've been an activist for 25 years. I used to do a radio program 25 years ago called Stand Up America, and I've just been one of these guys that identified the fact that our government is not working for us, and that was 25 years ago, and could you imagine how bad it is today? And I just think it's time that the American people really have a real voice and stop being misrepresented. And we have the technology today where we can actually start giving the people a voice on issues that affect their lives. And so that's what we're pushing. And but I'm really excited about being on the program with you tonight and hearing what these candidates have to say about how they're going to straighten out their states.
I agree. It would be a great show tonight. Well, why don't we start with Mark McFarland tonight? Now, Mark McFarland is running for governor in Michigan. I'm not familiar with Mark's campaign, so I'll bring him on and let him introduce himself and tell you a little bit about himself. Mark, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Hi, Mark.
How you doing, Mark?
Good.
Thanks for coming on the show. You want to tell the audience a little bit about yourself?
Okay. I'm a licensed private investigator. I've been a political aspirant for some years now. I had run in 2004, 2008, and 2012 against the local county executive here in Bay County, Michigan. I was unsuccessful in that bid, in those bids, because in a very provincial area such as this county, people tend to just vote a certain way, And in a larger election, such as a gubernatorial election, you have a great diverse group of people that can make the right decision. A lot of our issues deal with constitutional issues, such as gun rights. We're pushing for constitutional open carry of handguns. Right now we have a transport restriction in Michigan, which means that you can open carry in Michigan, but once you get into your car, you have to place the gun in the trunk and the ammo in the glove compartment. And they know that hinders one's ability to open carry. So then you must go through and basically apply for a concealed pistols permit to be able to open carry anywhere, including your car.
And this is in Michigan that you're talking about?
Yes.
Okay.
There are some states, Alaska, Wyoming, Arizona, and Vermont. There's four states that allow constitutional open carry of handguns without a permit. And that's what we're pushing for.
I got onto your website today and looked around a little bit. I was pretty impressed by some of the things you're trying to change, like the drinking age and the marijuana laws. Those are two big issues that have been ongoing that nobody's ever done anything about. I applaud you for bringing that to the table.
Well, thank you. I really believe that when you look at the marijuana laws, the federal marijuana laws, they're very, very restrictive. We're talking about a drug that is not a narcotic, yet the federal government continues to list this as a Schedule I drug. And it is unconscionable that they continue to do that. They hold the states hostage whenever the state will legislate that we have medical marijuana or recreational marijuana. So what we want to do is we want to open it up where it's tightly regulated, where the average citizen can go buy it within a pharmacy-type setting. And they would be allowed so much per month. And this way, we can assure the purity of it, and it can be regulated, such as alcohol and tobacco. Now, people will say, well, but marijuana can be addictive, which it can be, but they do nothing about tobacco. And tobacco is one of the most addictive substances there is.
That's correct.
So if they don't want to legalize marijuana, then let's abolish tobacco tomorrow.
That's my thoughts exactly. What are your thoughts on the birth certificate issue?
Pardon me, I didn't catch that.
The birth certificate issue. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, when you take a look at this entire issue, Corsi, who basically opened this up in 2008, I believe that this gentleman is right on target. I had looked at an interview with him where he stated that he believes now that Mr. Trump is complicit in this with Mr. Obama. And I once thought that there were only two situations. Either Mr. Trump was legitimate in this and that he had been threatened in some way to shut down, or that he was complicit. And now I'm looking at Corsi's theory, and it makes a lot of sense. Because right after this happened, Corsi's book come out, Trump had contacted Corsi. He wanted some copies of the book before it come out. And right after that, Trump was after his $60 million contract with GE, and he was able to get it. And so I think that this was a way that they could put the media to sleep on this, basically.
Mm-hmm.
Shut it down. And it did, because they conducted polls. And after the birth certificate appeared, more people in this country believed that, okay, he was born in Hawaii, when the average citizen is not skilled in looking at a document and basically analyzing it and seeing that, look, through a proper investigation, such as Maricopa, what they've done, you can see that this is a layered document.
Mm-hmm.
There are so many errors in this document. The one thing that he states is that when you look at the Nordyke twins being born one day after supposedly
right.
Obama being born, the Nordyke twins, they are on microfilm because they put everything on microfilm, microfiche. Well, Obama's is not on microfilm. Why wouldn't his be on microfilm?
Right. And what from what I've heard, that there was some microfilm that disappeared from the Library of Congress, or I don't remember the website, but they went to go physically get the microfilm on when Obama's mother came back to Hawaii, and that disappeared.
Right, and then the Nordyke twins having numbers that are lower than Obama's, which is
right.
absolutely impossible, because theirs was registered 3 days later, on the 11th of August. There's no way that they could have lower numbers.
Right.
There should be at least 20 numbers in between the Nordyke twins and Obama's, if these
mm-hmm.
dates are right.
Mm-hmm. That's correct. We have a guest that would like to ask you a question. His name is Al. I'll bring him on so he can... Al, are you there?
Oh, yes, ma'am, I'm here, but I wasn't here that... I thought Mike wanted to talk to me about my findings.
Oh, okay. Well, would you like to go ahead and introduce yourself then and let everyone know
yes,
what
ma'am.
Your findings are?
Yeah, sure. Well, my name is Al Hendershot, and I've been working with Jerry Corsi now and other people, you know, since 2011 on everything from investigating the house in Chicago to the, you know, to the $104,000, you know, lot sale and purchase, and to the Social Security number as well.
Mm-hmm.
But I've also shared some information that I had also, you know, with the posse out there in Arizona.
Okay. Would you like to tell us what that was?
Wow. Well, what do you want me to start with? The house in Chicago or the Social Security number? What?
Start with the house and go to the Social Security number.
Oh my God. Well. I discovered, you know, through some database searches that Obama doesn't own the house in Chicago. He doesn't own anything. A trust itself actually owns the house. And it's a trust that Obama didn't create either. It's a real estate investment trust that owns several properties there in Chicago. And the lot itself was actually deeded in trust to the trust itself. So Obama never paid the $104,000 for the lot. Rita Reska just gave it to him.
Wow, I am not familiar with that at all.
Yeah, he doesn't own anything, nothing. You remember how George Bush was always going to his house in Texas?
Yeah.
How Nixon was always going to his house in California, Ronald Reagan was going to his house in California. I mean, even Jimmy Carter went to his house in Georgia. Have you noticed that Obama's never set foot in that house in Chicago?
I did not know that.
It's not his house. Nothing. It's not even his.
I was not familiar with that.
Yeah, and, you know, but you know, going with that, me and Jerry, we worked on that, oh my God, 2 years, I think, you know, off and on for 2 years. A judge is actually listed as the owner of 5046 South Greenwood, and Obama's accountant there with the Treasury office there in Chicago for county is actually listed as the owner of the property.
Mm-hmm. Hmm.
Not Obama. You know, Obama doesn't even have a mortgage on the house. Nothing.
Wow. Were you familiar with that at all, Mark?
I had heard something about that as far as the property, the deed. It's not surprising because if he's having a difficult time with proper documentation, this could be a good reason why this is set up.
Well, yeah, because when one purchases a piece, when one buys a house, like me and my wife bought our house, well, I had to supply a Social Security number, you know, because you can't get a mortgage without it. You know, you can't process a loan application without it either. I mean, you can't even get your cable turned on without just giving them your Social Security number. And, you know, one of the ironies of it is, I mean, think about it. Now, this is going back to the 042 Social Security number. The dossier that I put together on Obama and his wife, it's like, I don't know, about 150 pages thick now. The when you go to apply for it to get your Social Security number, you have to give them a birth certificate, right? I mean, that's the one document that, I mean, that is your document for your Social Security number. So if you don't have a birth certificate, you're not going to get a Social Security number. And so hence, Hawaii, Connecticut, Social Security number 042, come on. I mean, that's a no-brainer there. I mean, everybody knows his grandmother got it for him. And it also boils down to that Barack Obama's brother, Malik, has a Social Security number from D.C. Obama's aunt, Zetuni Obama, she has a Social Security number from Indiana. I got a dossier on her, too. His uncle, Omar, has two Social Security numbers. They're in Massachusetts. One from 1963. When I don't know how he got that, being an illegal alien, and then another one from some woman that lives there in Boston. And so his whole family has nothing but fake Social Security numbers, and there's about four or five other people on Malik Obama's side that they have. That they're all using the same Social Security number. They're in Maryland.
As who?
Huh?
They're all using the same Social Security number, all of them together?
No. Malik Obama, which is in Kenya. You know, he's Obama's brother. That's some kind of Islamist radical. That's what he thinks he is. He has a Social Security number from Washington, D.C. from about 1985 or 1986. Now, there's about four or five members of his immediate family that I tracked down in Maryland, and they're all using the same Social Security number. Malik Obama's Social Security number, who's in Kenya. His uncle Omar, who lives in Massachusetts, you know the guy that got busted for drunk driving that works in a liquor store? He's got a Social Security number. He's got two of them that he's using. And Aunt Zetuni, there in Boston, Massachusetts, her Social Security number was issued in Indiana in like 2001, something like that.
Amazing.
Yeah.
That is really amazing.
Yeah, and but the irony is that, you know, that stuff runs in your family. Shucking and jiving runs in your family. Okay? And the shinola runs thick. You know, you can't escape it. But the irony is, and it boils down to, I mean, I went out and I bought the, what's that software that you use to, Photoshop. It took me 5 minutes to tear that birth certificate apart in Photoshop. I even put my information on that birth certificate in Photoshop.
Really?
I drew my own smiley faces on it. And then when I printed it out and I scanned it in, it only had one layer when I was done with it.
Wow.
I spent $350 for the Photoshop online. I downloaded it. And I ran up the birth certificate through it, and I found all nine layers in about 2 seconds. And I played with it. I put my name on it.
Wow. That
you
is
know, I mean,
amazing.
I put my, Yeah, it took me 5 minutes to put my name on Obama's birth certificate, Albert E. Hendershot Jr. And when I printed it out, I scanned it into my computer. One layer. You know, so it's bogus.
Wow. Well, we all know it's bogus. I think we've known that for a long time.
See, but what's changed is, think about it, though, okay? The Internet has changed everything, okay? Because all of these databases that we use to put our personal information in, okay, our relatives, our nieces, nephews, brothers, jobs, your car.
Mm-hmm.
I can run your name through that. What is your name, ma'am?
Mona.
Mona. What is your last name, Mona?
Presley.
Mona Presley. Mona, what state do you live in?
I live in Pennsylvania.
Live in Pennsylvania. Okay, Mona Presley in Pennsylvania. I guarantee you, I key your name through that database, I can find you in about 5 minutes. I can get your social, where you live, what car you drive, get your VIN number, how you vote, how you're registered. Even if you've been in court, I'll find out. You see what I'm saying? It's that simple.
Mm-hmm.
Because all of our information is all intertwined within these databases. Okay? And now, whenever you go back into these databases, let's say you want to delete information. Okay? You can delete the information, but somebody has to do it for you. But they still need your information in order to delete that information. So that gets caught up in the loop and in those databases. And so that's how come that Harrison J. Bunnell stuff was able to pull up with a link of being linked to Obama's Social Security number and having Michelle Obama as a relative of Harry Bunnell. You know, I mean, we even did a FOIA, a Social Security Administration FOIA, using Harry Bunnell, 04268-4425 Social Security number and the date of birth of 1890. And we got a letter back from them stating that they could not supply us with that information due to privacy issues.
And when did you do that?
In November of last year. We have proof from the Social Security Administration that Obama's Social Security number is bogus and fake and false. We found the Harry Bunnell, okay, in the census there in New York, born in 1890, which is one of the hits that came up on the 04268-4425 Social Security number from 1890.
Okay. Well, I have a caller on that would like to ask you a question about not paying property taxes. Ed Sunderland. I'm going to bring him on so he can go ahead and ask you. Ed?
Yeah, hi, Al. This is Ed Sunderland from Texas.
Yeah, good evening, sir. How are you?
Good. I filed voter fraud charges against the DNC chair in 2009 about all this stuff, and I've been following you and Susan Daniels and everybody that's been doing this kind of research, and I've got an extensive background in real estate, and I understand that since Barack Obama does not own that property, has he still been writing off taxes and insurance on it, or claiming it on
his
taxes?
Yes, well, sir. Yes, sir, he sure has, using the 04268, using the bogus Social Security number.
That's what I wanted to check out, because that is completely stupid. And it's arrogant. He thinks he can get away with it, and he probably will if somebody doesn't jump him for it.
Well, that's the whole thing. We've been I did something that was really sneaky a couple of years ago. Alabama is a one-party state. I can tape record a phone conversation here in the state of Alabama as a debt collector. That we do it all the time.
Aha. Uh-huh.
And I contacted Congressman Bill Posey from Florida. I contacted his office, and I talked with his press secretary, Joe Sakala. And he admitted to me, and I got it. I got the conversation. I have it on disc. I even have it up on YouTube. That they know about Barack Obama's inconsistencies, as they call it. We know about his inconsistencies. But they failed to tell me that they're not going to do anything about it because they fear media ridicule. Period. They don't want to see black people rioting out in the streets. They fear media ridicule over this issue. So they don't want to touch it. They want nothing to do with it. And that's the only reason why, because they fear media ridicule. I even called the Cook County Recorder's Office. Okay, these are the people that record real estate transactions. Now, do you remember hearing about the buffer zone, that lot that Obama bought off of Rita Reska?
Right, yeah.
Okay, I did a FOIA with them. They sent me everything on it, okay? And the assessment that was supposed to be done on that lot, nothing was ever done. It came with a blank assessment. They never put one single dollar amount on that assessment for that lot. For the PIN number, you know, for the PIN numbers. I even had the PIN numbers memorized. Not an assessment was not done on that lot because Rita Resco did it in a deed in trust to the trust that owns that house.
Al, Mike has called in. Let me put him on and see what he has to say. I think he wants to interject something. Hold on a second. Oh, where did he go? Oh, he hung up.
You know, a lot of, the one thing that and what is, you know, what is the hardest thing that we've been able to do is put the dots together. Okay, you know, is connecting dots on this man. And, you know, with so many layers to this onion, sometimes the information can get convoluted. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And it's almost like it points in so many different directions. It's kind of like trying to find that airplane now that crashed out in the China Sea. You know, it's Obama's got so many layers of it, and he's made it virtually impossible to put those dots together.
Well, I think that's been done on purpose.
Of course it has. I mean,
we're trying to find somebody that's got the cojones to do something. That's been more of a challenge than I thought it would be, you know. But because there's guys like you and me and other people that are actually trying to do something about it, and we keep running into a brick wall when we get to the authority figures or somebody that can do something about it.
Congress. When we had our lawsuit here in Birmingham to keep Obama off the ballot, Judge Lee, flat out told me that she's going to dismiss the case because I wanted to get rid of Obama because he's black like her.
Yeah.
That's what the judge told me in chambers.
Well, I went to Austin to the Texas Election Commission to testify before Congress, which I did in order to try to get a small House bill, one-page bill, 650 passed, that all it would do would make sure that candidates on the Texas ballot would be natural-born citizens. And that didn't pass. And it was partly due to the Republican establishment there. They didn't want that to happen. And I don't know if it's because that they want other candidates to get on the ballot that aren't U.S. citizens. I don't know.
What is your name again, sir?
Ed Sunderland.
Ed. Yep. I don't know if the Secretary of State there in Texas has the ability. Like, I mean, I went to our office here in Montgomery. I just walked in off the street, and I wanted to see the paperwork that a candidate has to do in order to register in the state. Okay, you know, to run for federal office.
Right.
On the application itself, did you know that there is no space there to where the applicant or the person seeking office has to supply a Social Security number?
Right. Well, the applications here in Texas, for example, are written by the parties. The DNC and the Republican Party both have their own separate application for president, and you could be a dog for all anybody knows.
That's exactly correct.
Seriously.
Mark? What are your thoughts on all of this?
Well, I think we're on the right track as far as that would be one of the first things I would do as governor would be through the Secretary of State. We would legislate a law stating that, you know, the states run elections, even for federal offices, that this be verified. If you're running for president, that you would have to prove that you're a natural-born citizen.
How are you going to get around the two-party system to take care of that? I mean, if you've got a Republican legislature that doesn't want it either, I mean, how's that going to work?
Well, I think what you have to do is you have to shame these people. You have to say, look, you know, this is what the people want. This is, you know, constitutionally, this is protected. You know, I don't know where the Republicans are. I'm running on the Republican ticket, and I can understand.
Yeah.
I can understand the Democrats trying to hide this and conceal this, but I don't understand the Republicans.
Yeah, I agree.
Well, Mark, they told me, and here in Montgomery.
Let me interrupt for a second. I'm sorry. David?
Yes.
This would be a great time to hear about your idea and your book on how we can get over, how we can get past this and have a better system.
Yeah, you know, I'm just sitting back here listening to these gentlemen, and you guys have done a great job at, you know, uncovering information as to how our president may not be legal. But I think, you know, when I've been studying the system for a long time, and I think it's from the top to the bottom, you know, going after one person, I don't think that's going to fix the problems that we have here in America. I think we're starting to realize that the people in office really don't represent we the people, you know, whether they're legal or illegal or whatever.
That's true.
And, you know, I've just been pushing something where we have the technology. We don't live 235 years ago. We live in the 21st century. We're surrounded with this communication technology, and I'm just thinking if we want to have decisions that are truly of, by, and for the people, we should use this technology and tap into what the American people really want, as opposed to putting all our eggs in one basket and worrying about one person. That's what my goal is. We're learning that top-down systems benefit the people at the top. And I think what we've got to do is use this technology and really start tapping into what the people want and think and how they feel about the different issues in their lives, you know. That's the way I feel about it. I mean, I'm enjoying listening to you guys talk about this, but I don't think anything's really going to come of it, to tell you the truth, because, you know, between the Democrats and Republicans, both of those groups are fighting over the greatest prize ever known to mankind, which is $3 trillion. And I don't think they care about those little things. I think they really want to control the $3 trillion of ours that they're, you know, scamming us out of. That's my take on it. But what do you guys think?
Well, you know, short of going into the White House and dragging Obama out of the White House and somebody doing an arrest on him, that's it. That's not going to happen.
But the question is okay, let's say you get your information out, the American people are aware of it. What do you want to happen then? What's next? I mean, are we
looking for this one person to be arrested?
Well, that was then Joe Biden would take over. I mean,
I'd rather have Joe Biden here right now than Obama any day of the week.
Well,
okay.
I agree.
Joe Biden has been in office in one position or another for many, many years now, and he's part of the problem that's caused America to be in the situation that it's in.
Okay,
well, you cut the head off the snake and the rest of it dies.
Let's take a break for a minute. I have my next guest on the show. Let's take a break from this conversation, and let me introduce you to our next guest, which is David Laurie Vanderbeek. I was introduced to him, to David, when watching a YouTube video called If Obama Sends Police to Take Your Guns, Execute Them. After I saw that video, I was sold. And I found out he is a real, honest person, and he tells it like it is. He has courage, unlike the majority of our politicians, and is not afraid or intimidated by the label makers that label him or other people as a birther or 911 truther. I have great respect for David and think he will be a great governor and actually get things done. I've called him many times on my Twitter account, Ron Paul on steroids. But with that, let's bring David on and let him introduce himself. Hi, David. You're
Hello.
On the air. How are you?
I'm well. Thank you. How are you guys doing?
Good.
We're doing great. Do you want to tell us a little bit about yourself and then get into a little bit about what you think about the birth certificate issue?
Well, sure. The website, if people want to learn about me, the best way to do that would be to go to the website. It's NevadaGovernor2014.com. I'm the independent American Party candidate for governor of Nevada in 2014. And they can go there. They can get a sense for the whole platform. They can research and look up different topics there. There's also the YouTube channel, which is just YouTube, facebook.com/DavidLaurie, and there's a lot of information there. So I just invite people to Google my name. I have a large Google Plus page, a Facebook fan page, and there's a lot of information that goes back and forth. People are able to share and conversate. So there's no shortage of information if people want to look me up. There's plenty out there. And the Independent American Party, just so people can contextualize that, that's the affiliate. That's our state party, and that's the affiliate of the National Constitution Party. So it's a constitutional framework. I'm not saying the Constitution was perfect, a perfect document, but it's certainly the best document that anybody's come up with in human history, as far as we know, for securing natural rights of human beings and in these individual liberties. So that's kind of where I come from. I'm a sixth generation Nevadan, you know, married, five kids. I'm a marriage and family therapist. So I work a lot with the deeper motivations, emotional trauma, things that people work through. And I can look at, for example, it's a great profession that leading into a political career, because I can really get a grasp of where people are coming from and really ask them proper questions about their motivation and what are the consequences and what's intended, what's not, how to set the table, so to speak, with different issues. And I'm a systemic therapist, so I'm working a lot with the systems in terms of families, but also organizations. And politics is a lot of interlocking systems, and understand how the pieces interrelate and affect one another. So I hope that gives you a little bit of an idea.
Now, what are your thoughts on the birth certificate issue?
Well, the debate that you're bringing up and the debate that continues to go on about Obama's background is a debate that highlights how important it is to vet candidates. And just because somebody's running for president, you can't assume that the candidate is vetted, that the candidate is competent, or that, you know, that the candidate should be in the position that they're in. With Obama, I think about Obama, and I think he was running against Hillary Clinton. And Hillary Clinton, if anyone was anointed by the establishment, it was Hillary Clinton. And she was absolutely an anointed candidate that was supposed to win the nomination. And I think that Obama was a candidate that the Democrat Party threw up there as an alternative choice, for almost for fun, as an afterthought, because he had no political career to speak of. He hadn't accomplished anything. He wasn't a mover or shaker. He was just this junior senator from nowhere. But he has that multicultural appeal. He's very smooth. He's a good-looking guy. He's very calm. And so I think they threw him up there, and I think that what actually happened politically was an accident. I think Obama winning the nomination was not intended. It's just that when the people saw him, and they gravitated to him and away from Hillary Clinton. So I think it was an accident, genuinely, that he was in the position, because I think there's no question that Hillary is absolutely a real powerful person, and that the Clintons really know the ins and outs of politics. And I think that the more we observe Obama, the more we observe someone who is really not in his element, that he's not good at working with others, that he's not competent in his role, and that he's proven that over and over. And you look at this issue of the birth certificate, the fact that we can even have this debate is an indication that he wasn't properly, the question it raises for all candidates is, are they properly vetted before they are able and entitled to file for office?
Right. David, let me jump in and ask you a question. This has been on my mind, and you being a therapist can probably answer this question. What the heck happens to a person's mind when they win an election? It seems as though, you know, there's so many stories across the country, and, you know, I'm thinking of this guy in Canada, that was doing crack cocaine, and he's an alcoholic. And I'm thinking of Bill Clinton having sex with a 20-year-old, and I'm thinking of Nixon, I'm thinking of Bush, and I'm thinking of all these different people that have won these elections. I'm thinking of Christie. There's an old saying, absolute power corrupts absolutely. It seems as though our system puts regular people, or maybe even sometimes dysfunctional people, in positions of power, and they either become dysfunctional or super dysfunctional. I'm leaning toward the idea that this old system of ours gives people too much power. Now, what's your take on that? You're a therapist. Yeah, you see sort of dysfunctional people every day. How do we keep somebody from all of a sudden, you know, you walk into the room and everybody's applauding and the microphones are in your face, and all of a sudden, you know, you're making, a couple, $300,000-$500,000 a year, and you've got book deals, and you've got people coming at you all the time. You're no longer living in the same world after you get elected that you were in before you were elected.
Okay.
What's to keep people from really changing and being dysfunctional?
Okay. One of the things that's happening, and it's very clear when I say this, you'll know that it's true, is that we continue to elect the same personality types over and over.
Right.
Or the people who pretend or portray the same personality type over and over. It's a leadership challenger, protector, dominator, maverick / executive, administrator, workaholic, overachiever / loyalist, consensus taker, guardian.
You mean a type A personality?
To a certain degree, but it's a specific, to a certain degree, but there's components to it. When we say type A, we're not expressing the complexity of these traits, because there are very distinct personality types between, say, a challenger and an executive. They're different types of type A, but they could all get jumbled together. But they're distinct. There's distinctions, and they tend to get grouped together. Obama, to me, is someone who, this is why he looks more and more like a mistake to me, because his personality is not that. He's not dominant enough, nearly enough, as a personality to really even swim with the sharks that he's swimming with. That's what makes him so malleable. That's what makes him like putty. He is. You can go after Obama, but then it's like somebody said, I was listening, then you've got Biden right underneath, this very establishment. But what is Biden? You've got people like Bush, who was so, like Bush Jr., who was so much like Clay. But you know that there's Papa Bush behind him, and you know there's Dick Cheney and Donald Rumsfeld. And those men are very dominant, very domineering. And so,
doesn't it take a dominant person to wake up someday and say, okay, I'm going to run for office, I'm going to be the number one man in my state. There's 6 million people in my state, and I think I've got the answers for 6 million people. That, to me, anybody that does that seems like a type A personality that thinks that they have the answers for everybody.
Well,
and I just don't know if anybody like that really does exist. And, you know, I'm getting pretty old now. I'm 65 years old, and I can't really remember meeting anybody in my life where I said, you know, I think if this guy ran for office, he'd know what's best for 6 million people. I've never met anybody like that.
Yeah, you're talking. You're making me think of narcissism.
Right. Absolutely.
And the question is,
after you take that office, and all of a sudden the fame and the applause and the money and the power. How can someone not be narcissistic?
Right. We've created a system. Okay, the system is, the constitutional system was built on, not on federal, on this federal monster. It was built on individual sovereignty. That's what natural rights is. That's where you have no king. It was supposed to be that there was no IRS, you know, that there's no none of this nonsense that we've added to it.
Right.
So
absolutely.
If we went back to, so this is why it's fine to focus on Obama, but what we really, I believe, firmly, we've got to focus on counties and towns and nullification. So that, when I've got these articles here, you know, about Connecticut, where they want everybody to register certain firearms and certain magazines. I want to say something like high-capacity magazines or something like that. Anyway, and they aren't doing it. And that's nullification. It's nullification by the people.
Absolutely.
That's where the power is, where you stand up and you say, no, you're not going to run my life. No,
okay,
I'm not going to pay you anymore.
I just want to interrupt for a minute because Michael Volin would like to come on the show and say something, and also I'd like to get Sharon Rondeau from the Post email on because she has a question for both Mark McFarlane and David Laurie Vanderbeek. So I'll put them on. Sharon, are you there?
Yes, thank you very much for having me on.
Thank you for coming on. It's a pleasure It's a pleasure to hear from you again.
Well, thank you so much. And Mike is such a gentleman to invite me on and to ask a couple of questions. I know there are a lot of people listening, so I'll be very quick. And this has been really a great show for me to listen to up to this point because almost everyone who's come on, I've interviewed. Mr. Frank, Mr. Hendershot, Mr. McFarlane, and the only one I haven't interviewed is Mr. Vanderbeek. So it'll be my pleasure to speak with him and Mr. McFarlane again. Very quickly, I guess if I can, I don't know if there's an order in which I should go, but to Mr. Vanderbeek, good evening, and my name is Sharon Rondeau. I'm editor of the Post and Email. It's a newspaper based on constitutional issues and violations, basically, and was founded on the Obama eligibility question. I have been on your website, although it's been quite a while, and, of course, I wish you the best of luck in your endeavors in your campaign for governor of Nevada. I guess what I'd like to ask you is, assuming that when the cold case posse comes out and makes its announcement, whenever that's going to happen, whether it's this month or April or May, and everybody in America is then convinced unequivocally, or almost everybody, that Obama's birth certificate is a forgery, the Selective Service, and that perhaps there was a criminal conspiracy to put him in the White House. And then the layers of this start peeling away, and we start finding out, we don't know how many people might have been involved in this, but what do you think could happen, or what do you see as a possible scenario? What do you think will happen to, I hate to say the masses, but, you know, the mainstream America, how do you think we'll react to all of this and the layers of corruption that must have been present to bring us to our current state?
Will the, okay, so you're saying, your question, it sounds like, and I'll just kind of restate it, your question is, assuming that this cold case posse comes out, the announcement, and it's so evident to mainstream media and all the talking heads and mainstream Democrats and Republicans that there's a some kind of eligibility issue that's proved beyond all doubt to them, would they even acknowledge it? And, I mean, the question is, are you saying that they are in your question? Are you saying that they would actually acknowledge this? Do you? I mean, because I think it presupposes a lot about the establishment to say that they actually would acknowledge anything. I mean, when I think about, okay, so look at the lies. Look at the lies. We've shown. You think about Obama. Okay, the Obama lies. Think about Obamacare. It's crashed and burned, and how they spun that. Think about the IRS targeting patriots, how they just lie. They just bold-faced lie. I don't think they're capable of being honest. You look at the Fast and Furious, NSA surveillance, these messed up donations and wiretapping Congress, Benghazi. This They lie when the truth would suit them. I don't think they're capable of being honest. I just don't have any faith in them in that regard. I just don't think the establishment can do it. I don't think the establishment would do it. I think the only realistic scenario for me is that this president, that his power is effectively emasculated. And I think that we are working towards that. And, I mean, you look at how Obamacare has imploded. You look how the gun control agenda has imploded to a great degree. I guess I think your question is overly optimistic about the ability of this massive monstrosity of a machine establishment to make any kind of a course correction other than, okay, so this president is wacko and he's not capable of being a leader, therefore let him finish out his term and let him disappear and sell books and teach college classes after this. I think that he's just a big mistake, and I think they'll just be glad when his term's over. But I don't think that they'll ever get him out of office. I think he'll finish his term, and he'll just be an emasculated. He's like a lame duck president for the rest of his time.
Okay. Well, thank you for that.
Well, you know that that there's new information coming out with Sheriff Arpaio and Mike Zullo this month or next month that is supposed to be a mind blower from what I've heard. Have you heard about that, David?
You're asking me. I have not. So I am always open to having my mind blown because I believe in the truth, whether it's convenient or not. So whatever the truth is, I mean, would people like it if I wasn't supporting the truth? What else is there to support? So whatever the
That's
truth
right.
is, whatever the consequences are of that, I'm in support of that. Let's go for it. I support all truth movements. What else is there that I could support? I'm excited for more truth. I want truth. So
That's right.
Can I jump in and say something? I think that if that did happen, it would really be very good for what David Vanderbeek is pushing, because if he's pushing like community sovereignty, and if I understand you, David, that's what you are
yes.
pushing. Well, that's what I believe in too. I think
let me encapsulate it. Let me encapsulate it just so you can be clear. I'm supporting the 10th Amendment movement to stop the federal encroachment into our lives. That is the encapsulation of everything that I'm about, that we are supposed to be able to function without the federal government in every part of our lives.
I think by empowering the people in the community, that will facilitate what you're trying to do. Because people realize that if they can make these decisions without these decisions being dictated to them, then I think that sovereignty is really going to spread roots. I really do.
Thank you, David, for that. Let me bring on Mike. He wants to say something. Mike, are you there?
I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yes, you're on the air.
Mona, I'd like to thank you for taking control tonight. I didn't think I would get a chance to call in, but thank you. And there's so much going on the show. I'd like to thank both David and Mark. And you guys, you recognize fraud. I commend you, both of you. That's the caliber of people we need. We'll have to sift through your differences and policies. And you're not afraid to put your campaign on the line and come forward and speak the truth. I'd like to thank everybody else that came on. Ed from Texas, I'd like to remind the audience that Ed gave a sheriff's kit to his congressman, Dr. Michael C. Burgess, and Ed had the privilege of having a private conference with Mike Zullo, with Michael C. Burgess at that time, and Ed has a lot of inside information. Don't release anything confidential tonight, Ed. I'd like to thank Al Hendershot. I've actually had him on the show before. Al, we will have you back on for another show. I'd like to thank your campaign manager, David, AJ. When she sends me an email, I have to stand back about 5 feet from my computer because it just she's so full of enthusiasm, it jumps out. I know. And I've had you on the show, too, David, before the sheriff came out with his investigation, and I applaud you for that. And I wanted to have you and Mark at the same time on the show because I wanted to show the people of the United States that we have two candidates running for the office of governor that are not afraid to step forward. I took a couple of notes. I only have a couple of minutes because I am traveling on Mayor Obama's birthday to get time and work. David, you're correct about electing the same people in over and over. What are we going to do? We're going to have Hillary right back in the office. We're going to have the Clintons right back in the office. It's time for us to stop. Let's take a step back. Forget about Fox News. They're going to put their candidate out there, whoever that may be. And it's really appalling. Recently we had what? We had Barbara Bush. I have nothing bad against her. She thinks Jeb Bush is the greatest thing in this world, and he would be the best candidate. I'm sorry. I hate Jeb Bush, and I just said it. And, you know, we can't let Obama – I know. I speak my mind. David, we can't let Obama get out of office. He'll slip out through our fingers. We need to finish the job now. What's going to happen? Will Joe Biden become president? Maybe. This has never happened in the course of this country. This is a constitutional crisis. We will not recognize our government when the truth comes out very shortly with the release of the new information. And I'd like to say that we're going to be developing a sheriff kit number two with the new information. We're going to go back to Congress like we did the first time. We're going to finish the job. And I was supposed to have a news conference with Mark McFarland, but something came up that day. I had to travel to Colorado overnight. I actually jumped in my car. My wife and I team drive. And we just drove straight to Colorado. All we did was stop for gasoline and eat something once in a while. So that would have been great, Mark, and everybody's behind you. And it's just coming to the point now where we do have patriots on board. People are coming and taking a second look at this. They know they've been bamboozled. They know they've been lied to. They're saying, stop. Hold, let me take a second look at this. They don't know the entire information, the entire timeline. Okay, I want to cover one more thing that Mona had mentioned earlier. When Mark was talking about the microfiche, he's correct in that. And what Mona was referring to was Jerome Corsi went to the archives in Maryland to try to look for INS records for the time period around August 1961. They started before August, and we're going to work their way through that whole month. And coincidentally, for a 10-year period, there was a piece of microfiche missing. And guess what? That was August 1961. For 10 years, there was continuous microfiche, but except for that. That just adds suspicion to this whole thing. I hope we'll get an answer. Excuse me, I'm going to rephrase that. I know we're going to get the answer when the information comes out. I used to say hope, but now with the investigation where it's at, we will get an answer. And the people will prevail. And maybe, like David Frank says, and that's why I have David on, he's a true patriot, we need to look a little bit ahead what's going to happen after this. We're going to shake up Washington. If we have to throw them all out, we'll throw them all out and we'll start fresh. But they're going to get a message that average people, like everybody here on the show tonight, took control, said, no, we're not going to take it. It's taken us all this time to get as far as we did. When I started this website in 2008, we had nothing but volunteers, nothing. We got every bit of information we could off the Internet. Okay, with that said, I want to turn it back over to Sharon. She's from the Post email. I know she's interviewed Mark. I know she's interviewed David and many other guests, anybody involved in this. And she's interviewed Al. Let her ask a few more questions so she could put a publication out there. And I don't know if there's any more callers on hold because, like I said, I'm traveling. Okay, guys, with that said, I didn't think I'd call in tonight, but I get so passionate when this show comes on the air. I'd like to thank everybody for their time, and I'll keep everybody updated.
Thank you, Mike.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks a lot, Mike. Have a good night.
You're welcome. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
A good night.
Okay, Sharon, do you have any more questions?
I do. Actually, there's a question I've been meaning to ask Mark because I've interviewed him before. In fact, he gave me a wonderful interview, and it turned into a three-part series almost. He said so many interesting things. What I'm wondering is, following your press conference that you had on the steps of the Department of Vital Statistics in, I think it was Lansing, Michigan, and you got an official stamped certified copy right from the deputy director, I believe it was, of the Department of Vital Statistics, as they call it. After that, I remember you, when we interviewed, you had said that you were going to give Barack Obama 30 days. You issued the challenge officially when I issued that publication, the article that I wrote on it, which was based on what we spoke about. And so I put it out that night, and you said officially that begins the 30-day clock ticking, that you would give Barack Obama 30 days to do the same thing, to fly to Hawaii, to ask for a certified long form, copy, and to do it right there at the Hawaii Department of Health so that somebody officially handed it to him with cameras rolling. Now, what has happened since then, and what is the next step given what has happened, what Obama's reaction to this has been?
Well, Sharon, Mr. Obama is not going to do that because he can't do it. He would have put his original birth certificate, well, a copy, like what I received, with a raised seal, and it would be authentic. And he didn't do that. And I think this is the critical mistake that he has made. It has proven throughout history, if you take a look at Richard Nixon, that presidents who lie like this, it's not going to turn out well for them. And I don't believe it will turn out well for him. The government has what you call plausible denial. They'll plausibly deny something, and they'll keep doing it, and they'll reach a point where they can't do it anymore. You take a look at the JFK assassination. The government can no longer hide behind the reality of what occurred that day in Dallas. These truths will come out, and they always do. So I'm optimistic that what will happen is once we reach critical mass, the politicians will have to cave. They'll have to start impeachment.
Okay, now that's great. I just wondered if you had heard from Mr. Obama at all, and if there had been any repercussions as a result of the article that we put out, because I think it has been a little bit more than 30 days. But that's good to know. And do you have any plans to do anything else since you issued that challenge and he did not respond to it?
Well, I think that we have to see what happens. We have to look at what Maricopa comes out with. We have to basically take it a step at a time because, the only thing that's going to really make this happen is for the government and the courts to take action. A special prosecutor, could come into this. The government needs to act on this. And like I said, I can understand why the Democratic Party wants to conceal this, but I don't understand the Republican Party concealing this. He has signed legislation that would be null and void if the Republican Party would get behind this and to take him out of office.
Mike wanted me to ask you about his letter to the White House that he invited you to attend. He wanted you to speak on that, if you could.
Yes, and Mike had sent a letter to the White House stating that he wanted the White House to present a copy of what they had scanned on the White House site, and he had welcomed me to attend, but apparently that hasn't happened.
Hmm. Well, go on, Sharon. Do you have another question?
No, that's really it. I've enjoyed speaking with both these gentlemen.
Great.
And
do you want to tell everybody about where they can contact you?
Sure. And from both of them as to how their campaigns are going and anything else they're doing. I run the post and email, which is www.thepostemail, so it's thepostemail.com, and my email address is editor@thepostemail.com, and I'd be happy to get any more updates, and of course we'll all be looking forward to the Cold Case Posse's announcement whenever that's going to come, because it is supposed to be quote-unquote universe shattering, and that's why I was interested to see really what both thought about what might happen once this news is made public, and I think we'll all be watching with great curiosity and eagerness to see what comes out. But thank you so very much. It's been great speaking with everyone this evening.
Well, thank you for coming on the show, Sharon. You take care.
You too. Thank you so much.
Okay, we have another caller, Sergeant Jeff Harrison, who's retired, who wants to make a few statements. Jeff, you're on the air.
Well, thank you for having me on here, and I want to say thanks everybody that comes on the show and also those that are listening. I talked with Mike a couple things, and I just want to go over a few things. It's going to be all over the board, but please bear with me. I'm trying to not waste the clock here. I'd like to just give another special announcement for Phil Berg, the attorney out there in eastern Pennsylvania. And his website is obamacrimes.com. And I talked with him about a week ago before I did my little radio show here in Du Bois, Pennsylvania. And we're starting to get some good responses from that. We're trying to reach people. And I asked him if I could give the title of the book. He said I could. And his book that's coming out is called Obama Scare. And if you go to his website, I bet you if you look at his website, a lot of the stuff that's on that website is probably going to be in his book. And I think we need to just give him another thank you, note that, he was one of the first guys that came out, and he happened to be a Democrat, and he said that the reason he was doing it was for the country and for Constitution and above party. Now, earlier we were talking on the show tonight about Obama just happened to get in there, and I don't believe that. I think he has a team of people behind him that did this. Somebody put that birth certificate on the website. Mark McFaulin there pointed out that it should have had a seal on it, and I have a seal. Close the deal, show the seal. Well, it's phony right from the beginning because it's a PDF. It is not a hard copy scanned document. Israel Science and Technology did a report on that. There's just all kinds of people that have done a report on that, and so we know where that is. I think Jerome Corzi needs to be thanked because he helped Lieutenant Zulo. He went over to Hawaii a couple times. He did an interview with a Beretta Vanvero, if that how it's called, V-I-V-I-A-N-O, and I listened to the interview with Corzi, and she was doing a documentary, and at that time she claimed the Clintons were indicating about the birther thing, and actually Obama is the first birther because in his bio, when he was trying to sell his book, he said that he was born in Kenya, and he wrote the bio on that, as far as I can figure out. I think that Mr. Obama, he was supposed to unite us, and he had made all kinds of claims and lies. We could have a show on just that alone. And if anybody did a book or a movie, it'd be Liar, Liar, Your Pants Are on Fire, something like Jim Carrey. But, we have, like, Jody Robert Cody, we have Mark McFaulin, we have Phil Berg. We have people on both sides of the fence that are coming out about this. when I look at the people that are engaged in this, that are fighting this, that are speaking up, I happen to be a janitor. And here in Dubois, I'm working with a guy that has a PhD. We have all kinds of people with high intelligence and high moral character and some of the best Americans that there are that are coming forward and fighting this. And in our government, we need people with a good moral character and good standing and not for sale. And we need to cut out some of this garbage about money that they can take and the money. And if you get funny with the money, that's just a saying that I come up with. But, you know, you get corrupted after you're there in for a while. And, you know, we've gotten away from our faith as the fathers, and people think you're nuts if you're a Christian and you have faith. And we need to go back to morals and have people of character. In the military, we were taught to, you know, lead by example and integrity, and we had checks and balances, and we had people watching each other and backing each other up. Let's see here. So I would just like to close with a couple things here. It says, I have a quote by Jefferson, Thomas Jefferson, who says, "All tyranny needs to gain a foothold is for good people of conscience to remain silent." So we can't be silent anymore. We need to start doing things, and we are doing things. We're giving handouts. We're contacting our congressmen, and Lieutenant Zulo asked people to write handwritten letters, and I asked people to continue to do that, make phone calls, go make a visit, get the sheriff kit, go to Mike's website, whereisobamasbirthcertificate.com, go to the sheriff's website. Another guy said the only thing necessary for evil to triumph is for good men to do nothing. Edmund Burke, he was a politician over in England around the, I think it's the 17th century, middle 1700s. And so basically I would just like to say that I've been leading by example, but it's not about me. It's something bigger. It's about our country. And I see a light at the end of the tunnel here. You know, I've been felt that I was alone because people criticized me and they laughed at me. And Lieutenant Zulo's coming out with this report. So what we need to do is we need to prepare people for the report that's coming out. We need to get the word out on this.
Right.
And I see that, you know, someday, you know, we're near the end of the tunnel. Hopefully we'll get out of this tunnel that's musty and lonely, and maybe we'll get out in some sunshine and have some fresh air, and our country will go on. And I think people will understand that when the truth comes out, the truth is cleansing. And I think that's the way it's going to go down. And we have to prepare the way. Just like John the Baptist had to prepare the way for Christ, well, maybe we need to prepare the way for people. I'm doing a little radio show, and I'm making CDs of that. I am going door-to-door to people's houses. I have my hand out. I'm leading by example. And Mike's leading by example. Lieutenant Zulo has done the hard work. And Sheriff O'Pyle, we are very thankful. And we have Reed Hayes, who came forward to do the document. We just have a bunch of brilliant people here. We need to continue to be in prayer. And I guess I'm running out of time, so I'll wrap it with we need to be in prayer, and we need to get boots on the ground, and we need people to get out of the bleachers and get in the fight. Thank you.
Well, thank you so much for being on the show, Jeff.
Thank you.
Okay. I have a question for both David and Mark about this. We have kits going out to congressmen, and they are not doing anything at all about it. What should we do? What else is there to do for us? Do you think that this is important for us to get out, or should we just leave it alone and not do anything else? I guess I'm confused on what we should do from here. And either one of you...
Yeah, this is David.
Okay,
my response to that is, okay, with you, you have to decide for yourself what your mission is in life and what your focus is. So if this is your focus and you truly feel in your heart of hearts that this is what you must do, then you absolutely... you know, should follow through on whatever you feel that is. If investigating this particular issue, I can tell you that for me, it is not. But I would support you in following that. My focus is on those things that I feel will most effectively and efficiently accomplish what I'm trying to do. And so as a governor candidate, the top priority of my campaign is focusing on restoring your American dream. And that means focusing on those truths, not all truths, but those truths which help you find a great career and income, get a world-class education, get world-class medical care, and be able to retire in comfort and prosperity with your loved ones. And so the way that my platform is structured is to be efficient and effective towards those things. If your focus is to bring down a president, is to focus on impeachment, which is not my focus, I think that's noble, and I think that's important if that's what your focus is to see him impeached, then you should follow through on those things that will lead to most efficiently and effectively towards impeachment. But that isn't, I don't want to come here and say that I have the same focus or priority as you, because I don't. I'm focused on an economic platform that will isolate our state from the war economy of Wall Street. I'm focused on ending all payments to the IRS from which we get zero benefits. You know, I'm focused on restoring land that has been stolen by the federal government back into the hands of Nevadans. I'm focused on establishing a North Dakota-style state bank that will insulate us from the next of any possible future stock market crash. I'm interested in making, I don't care who the president is, I'm interested in making the president irrelevant to Nevada.
That's wonderful. That is wonderful. And you did not pay taxes this year either, did you?
The law is, I paid those taxes that I'm required to pay. You should only pay those taxes that you're required to pay. And it is for you to determine whether or not you are required to pay taxes. That is what the law says. So I would encourage you to understand and come to some conclusion within yourself what taxes you are required to pay. Now, let me say this about the IRS. I'm not going to, when we're talking about IRS taxes, we're talking about an institution that did not exist and was not used to build up this nation. We created this nation without the IRS, and we can go back to what we had before the IRS. And so as individuals, and let me say this, I want to be very clear. There's a $2 trillion underground economy that is keeping this nation afloat, and they want to take control of that, and they want to destroy us economically. And that's elitism, that's socialism, that's communism, that's the mainstream Republicans and Democrats. And it is IRS tax evasion is saving this nation. And that I want to be clear about. IRS tax evasion is saving this nation. We have to cut off the money supply and the blood supply to this blood-sucking, vampiric parasite. And so IRS tax evasion is absolutely saving our economy.
I agree 100% on that one. I want to bring on one of my favorite guests, Sarge. He has a question, and he has some comments also. Sarge, are you there?
Yes, ma'am, I am.
How are
I
you
do
tonight?
Have... Oh, fine, thank you. And yourself?
I'm doing great, thank you. Go ahead with your question and your comment.
Thank you very much. I appreciate this opportunity. Gentlemen, I like much of what I've heard tonight. I think it's absolutely, absolutely essential, the things you are saying. But there was a commentator not too long ago asked, well, what can we do? We hand out the sheriff's kit. We see our representatives. We try to get as much information as possible. And, of course, all this is essential, must be done, must be continued to be continued in this manner. But I have never in my life seen an issue upon which there's such a tsunami, an avalanche, a mountain of evidence that has clearly been presented to those that have the obligation to do something about it, and they are relentless in the determination not to. Now, this is what I want to ask you gentlemen to speak to, and that is, since it seems as if there is, for whatever reason, whether it's because it will reveal their complicity in this travesty and or others simply do not want them exposed, or they are taking their marching orders from them, I'm beginning to think we are at the point where we are going to have to pledge our lives, our fortunes, and our sacred honor to undo this monstrosity that is this present federal executive administration. I'd like you to speak to that, because it would seem as if, I think the caller early when she was asking what more can we do, because that's just about all you can do within what the system, it's being done. Bush versus Gore in 2000 was an issue that was clearly of great constitutional importance, but the difference with that was it got into court. Both sides were able to be heard. Everybody was put under cross-examination. Evidence was introduced. A decision was rendered. In this case, every single judicial venue is relentlessly determined to not see it done. That's what I think, or see it examined. That's what I think is different about this, and that's what I'd like to speak to. Again, the issue of our lives, our fortunes, and our sacred honor.
Okay. Did you have a specific question for David or Mark?
Yeah, I'd like to speak to that. Are we in that? Are we at that point? Are we near that point? Should we even consider it? I'm talking about in the manner the founders and framers of this Constitution, the founders of this nation, found themselves after the Olive Branch petition was rejected by King George.
Well, I'll comment, but I'd like to hear Mark first. I can certainly comment, but he hasn't spoken, so.
Okay, Mona?
Yes?
I'd like to take this opportunity first to, I've had an opportunity to review Mr. Vanderbeek's platform, and I would have to say that I'm very impressed with his stance on the Tenth Amendment and to take states' rights as priority. Now, I do think I'm a little bit more optimistic about what will happen with this president. As the caller has stated, I'm looking at this, and this conspiracy of silence that I call it within the media, they won't be able to continue that. The truth will prevail, and we have history of this. Like I said, Mr. Nixon was unable to continue in office. Mr. Clinton, he knew he would be able to survive it because he knew that he had the votes in the Senate. I just don't see how the government can remain with their position. It won't work. It never works. It never works. It can't work.
Well, sir, they've been successfully doing it for 5 years now. None of these other incidents that you mentioned came even close to this time frame of a complete refusal to make a formal judicial adjudicatory inquiry into the matter. That's what's different. In every of these other cases, something formal was instituted to look at it. Bush v. Gore, Bill Clinton, Watergate, and so forth. This is the first time I've seen an issue of this magnitude, with this much evidence. I mean, like I said, it's a mountain of certainly circumstances, and there's an absolute refusal to examine it judicially or through formal congressional adjudication of some sort using the subpoena power. It's almost unprecedented in that.
You are absolutely correct. And
and where I come into this is I'm running on the Republican Party, and I do not understand where the party is here. The party is complicit in this. They're complicit along with the Democratic Party to remain silent on this, and they hold the media hostage because they control the licensing. They control the federal judges.
But you know, the media, of course, has the complete, absolute constitutional freedom to ignore or report on what they wish. I have no faith in them whatsoever. I'm not looking from the mainstream media. I am not looking for any sort of solution until they are absolutely forced to by the fact that everyone else in the world is covering. So I have no confidence in the media at all. What I am dismayed by is our elected officials with the sworn constitutional duty to do something about it and who absolutely refuse to, along with their colleagues in the judiciary at all levels.
It's Sarge, right?
Yes.
Okay, let me just jump in, okay? So let me give you an additional perspective. So this is David. What I would say to you is it sounds like what you said it. You said one of the questions you said was, are we at the point where we have to pledge our sacred honors? And what you're talking about there, to me, it sounds like where we actually have to have an armed revolution almost to fix this, because the machine is so broken and it's so grotesque and it's so overrun with corruption and decadence that only bloodshed can restore liberty. I mean, that's
I'm
what
not
it sounds
quite
like you're
at that point, but I'm right. I'm willing to step right up to the edge and look into it, and acknowledge it may be necessary. Yes.
Well, okay. So this is what I was. What I have are these two articles that I can comment on, and it's this debate over in Connecticut again, because the debate is that these people are not registering their firearms as required by state law. There's thousands, tens of thousands of people out there that aren't doing it. And so that's what the government is doing, is pushing the people back into a corner. And at some point, Americans have to decide whether they're going to be Americans or whether they're going to be more like Russians or more like North Koreans or more like the Germans in Nazi Germany. They just kind of acquiesce and go along with more tyranny and more tyranny. At some point, real Americans, if they're left, they draw a line in the sand, and they said, okay, this is the line in the sand. If you come across this line, then it's on. And that means I'm going to fight you with firearms. I'm going to have an armed resistance to what you're doing. So
I am grateful that you used the word that so many people are going to be afraid. We're looking at tyranny here. Tyranny. Not only with the actions of this government, with Obamacare is an example of tyranny. It's not the worst sort of tyranny, but it is tyranny nonetheless. And what we're looking at here with this inability to examine a constitutional question, a completely legitimate constitutional question dealing with Article 2, Section 1, Clause 5, we are also looking at another form of tyranny when we have not got access to the judiciary or to the Congress to have it examined. It's tyranny.
Exactly.
Right.
You're right. And there's issue after issue after issue on which this is true again and again and again. And that's why my focus, because I feel that the federal government in Washington is so far gone that only God, only Jesus Christ, as far as I'm concerned, can sort that mess out. That's kind of where I'm at. The federal government in fixing it is not my priority at all. My priority is Nevada. And Nevada, I feel very comfortable with the idea that we can fix Nevada. I'm 100% confident that we can have a safe haven of liberty. Yeah, we can have a place that patriots can come and live the Second Amendment. If they want to have a shootout in Connecticut and realize, I mean, these are genuinely stupid lawmakers, genuinely, and this police officer that got put on leave that said, I will kick down doors and confiscate guns. I mean, they were having a debate. So this police officer in Connecticut is having a debate with some people on Facebook. And he says, I can't wait to get the order to come down and kick down your door and take your guns. And that, though, that attitude, that cavalier narcissism, sociopathy, that Lieutenant Vance over there that said to that woman, I'm the master, ma'am, I'm the master. He said that to another person that's his equal. They don't get it. And if they want to push that, then they're not going to just face a bunch of quote-unquote hillbillies or quote-unquote, they want to call us rednecks or Bible thumpers or gun huggers. They're going to face men like me who are determined, who are well-educated, who are professional, who have been veterans. I can shoot to kill. I can shoot one shot, one kill. I will go into a totally different part of my personality and a mode to protect my family and do whatever it takes, because they're not going to come into my home. They're not going to cross the threshold. They're not going to confiscate my guns. We are going to be equals. I'm not going to be their slave. So I just don't care. And that's kind of where it came from, is that I had my own fears, my own anxieties. And in engaging the political process and getting to where I am and earning the confidence of a party over years and being a filed candidate, I'm able to speak out in a way that empowers others. So rather than saying, oh, be my subjects, me, 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 look at me, look at me, look at me, it's about, okay, look, I'm going to say no to the government, and I'm inviting you to participate with me and say no, because we've got to use our First Amendment so that we don't have to resort to our Second Amendment. We've got to use the First Amendment as much as we possibly can to shout them down and say no. And if they want to push on us, we've got to be prepared to push back. And the fact of the matter is, if someone is not willing to do what you're doing and speak out, it's likely that you can't count on them to pull a trigger if they had to.
Well, I have to agree with you absolutely. But again, the thing about this issue that is different from all the other scandals, NSA gate, IRS gate, Benghazi, all the others, all of them, in every one of these other instances, and I mean everyone, none of them went 5 years without some sort of formal adjudicatory inquiry. None of them. This one is going on without a peep. In fact, it's even worse than that. People who attempt to bring it up to have it examined on the merits, again, not one single case was gone to court when it's being examined on the merits in an adversarial proceeding, not one anywhere in the nation. They're called insane, demented, lunatic, racist. They're just vilified. And it's not just by Democrats. It's by Republicans and others. That's what's so insidious about this one. 5 years, not one single inquiry on the merits in any court, any congressional hearing, nowhere. It's like I like to make it akin to Victorian England and the horror of exposing a woman's ankles. It's like that. It's almost a sort of a madness in and of itself.
Can I jump in here?
Go ahead, yeah, David.
Yeah, I think there's a big difference between the time of Richard Nixon and today. You know, back at the time of Nixon, the budget was large, but it wasn't like it is now. And what's happening is this budget is feeding this organized crime system, and it's bigger and more organized than ever before. And what we have to realize is that when you've got something this big that you've got to contend with, you don't do it from the top down. You do it from the ground up. And I think David is absolutely right when he's talking about the First Amendment being more important right now than the Second Amendment. We have all this wonderful communication technology, and all we have to do is start to utilize it. And that's what we're pushing. We're pushing a plan to start to empower the communities so that issues like marijuana can be raised, debated, and voted on. You know, if you take a look at Colorado right now, even though federally marijuana is against the law, it was the people that voted and decided to have it legalized. And that's what we've got to do with all this stuff. And what we've got to do is start raising, debating, and voting on issues using the technology that we've never, ever had before. And that's what I think. You know, remember when Ross Perot ran for office, actually was on Larry King Live. I think it was in 1990. And all the guy said was technological town hall meeting on Larry King Live. And America went crazy. They thought that Ross Perot, understanding technology and being as smart as he was supposed to be, that he was going to hook up the technology and let the people start raising, debating, and voting directly on the issues. And America went crazy. Well, we've got the technology now to make all this a reality. And the answer isn't in Washington, and it's not in state capitals. It's in your own community, because right now what we have is a top-down system. If you look at organized crime, it was a top-down system. And once again, top-down systems benefit the people at the top. We now have the communication technology to have a ground-up system where people are empowered equally. They can finally have use that First Amendment where they have freedom of voice, freedom of speech, and we can start hooking up the communication technology in every community. We have the television now that's being used to program us to be over-sexed and over-violent, and I'm sure David would surely agree that that's causing a lot of our societal problems, wouldn't you, David? David?
Yes. As far as being conditioned, on the one hand, we are
programmed.
We're being programmed to be very hypersexual at the same time that everybody's being, okay, if you happen to act it out, then you will be listed as a sex offender for the rest of your life and in the system. So that's the kind of the irony there.
Right. They're using television against us. It's an amazing communication technology that we've never had. We've got to use it for us. And, you know, being in the 21st century, you know, we've got the Travel Channel, the Food Channel, the History Channel. We've got all these channels, but we don't have the most important channel. Most important channel in every community needs to be the local issues television and radio channel to send ideas out that people have in their communities to make education better, environment, whatever the issue is. Like David was talking about, income tax. Maybe the people in the communities should raise, debate, and vote on that issue and let the people decide in their communities whether income tax is constitutional or not. And then, you know, we live in the 21st century. We're voting on American Idol. We're voting on Dancing with the Stars. We're voting on CNN, Fox, all these different venues. Let the people start voting on these issues. All we've got to do is build a database in every community that will house your citizen participation identification number, your ID number, so that if somebody is interested in this particular issue, they can vote with any touch-tone phone. The call will go into the computer. It'll ask them for their ID number and PIN number, ask them what issue number they'd like to vote on, press 1 for yes, 2 for no, count the vote, block you out for voting more than once. Every time the debate is replayed on this particular issue, there's an updated tally of the yeses and the noes over a period of time, I suggest 10 days, and so that the people in the community don't only understand the issue, but the outcome will come from them. They will implement that idea in their own community, and when they find things that work in their community, they'll share it with other communities, and we can start rebuilding America from the ground up. And we can quit worrying about Obama and the goofballs in state capitals that are doing nothing but capitalizing off of the sale of alcohol and tobacco. They're going to capitalize off of marijuana now, gambling, things like that. You know, the state capitals have turned into the new mafia. That's what the mafia used to do. They used to make money off of all of these vices, and that's what the state government is doing. So let the people start acting and feeling like the owners of this country instead of just the taxpayers. You know, if one person doesn't pay his taxes, you know, like Wesley Snipes, he didn't. He went to prison. But the thing is if all of a sudden the whole community decides not to pay their taxes, you know, there's an old question that's been thrown around for many years. What if everybody decided not to pay their income tax? What if we all vote and the majority decides that income tax is unconstitutional and we all decide to quit feeding the monster? You know, this system is just like cancer. It's killing us. It's stealing our dreams. It's stealing our hopes. It's stealing our future. It's stealing our time. But by the community coming together and deciding that this is something that, you know, that we want, and you implement it in your own community, all of a sudden we can start rebuilding America from the ground up. And that's what I suggest. You know, I've been promoting this for a long time, and I know it's absolutely right because all the politicians hate it. So that's what we're pushing, and I don't think we need guns.
Agreed.
I don't think we want to go there, because the one thing that the American people may have guns, but they aren't, number one, they aren't organized, and number two, all they've got to do is turn your electricity off, and you're going to come sooner or later.
Please don't misunderstand me. I'm not interested in any sort of rogue action a la Chris Dorner. Oh, no. I'm speaking of, look, we've got many times a place where many of these governors have been pushed pretty hard, and they, you know, issue these veiled warnings about, you know, encroachment of the federal government on. What I would be waiting for would be some governor, some lawful authority like a governor or state legislature that calls out its militia to encroach the fight against the encroachment of the federal government. Who knows? That might be the catalyst. I'm not talking about people running around in unorganized merry bands just shooting at federal agents. No, absolutely not. I don't mind being a combatant. I just don't want to be a criminal. That's all.
Yeah,
if you do that on your own, you are a criminal. But I'm simply asking the question, will there be a time? Because it would seem to me, look, I'm willing to wait for what the sheriff is going to unveil. He's either going to do it in this month or shortly thereafter. And then I am utterly convinced that this information, even though the information is already out there, is so compelling, something should have been done by now. But this new information is going to be so overwhelming. There literally can be no other moral option than to do something about it immediately when it comes out. And if nothing happens then, and these people still who have the constitutional responsibility to do something about it, once it's been pretty much proven beyond even the shadow of a doubt that this man is committing identity fraud and he's constitutionally ineligible, at that point I would say to you, somebody's governor, somebody's legislature needs to call out their militia and get ready to take whatever action needs to be taken. Not as individual mobs of citizens. No, that never can be countenanced. I'm talking about the constitutional remedy that presently exists. It might be ugly, but it's there, and it's not illegal.
Yeah, I don't think they're going to bite the hand that feeds them. And right now, the federal government and the state government are all feeding each other off of each other. And I don't know. I listen to what you're saying, but I just can't see it happening. I mean, what force, what military or police force would ever be involved in fighting the United States military?
Every state has a militia provision. True, it's rusty, dusty, creaky, wouldn't work the way they are for the most part. I'm not talking about the NASCAR. I was a member of the NASCAR for 26 years, along with 4 years active duty in the United States Army. So I'm not talking about either of those bodies. I'm talking about the National Guard, even when they're organized in state service. I'm not talking about that. I'm not talking about the Army. I'm talking about the militia.
The Citizen Militia mentioned in the Militia Act. Remember this, during the Whiskey Rebellion, the militia was used against the American people.
Yeah, well, militia can be used for good or bad purposes. It doesn't matter. In this case, to resist an unlawful encroachment of an absolutely illegitimate and unconstitutional federal government would be a good purpose for it. It would be a constitutional and legal purpose. Doesn't mean you can't get killed because you'll be a combatant, but it would be constitutional, would be legal. Remember, no matter how you feel about the war between the states, they did not try one single Confederate soldier for treason, because none of them were guilty of it.
They, there are a lot of things that are legal in this country anymore, but they aren't right. You know, we live in a world where, well, it may not be wrong, but it's illegal, or it may not be right, but it's legal. Everything's backwards, and those are the lawmakers that have imposed this on our country, and that's why we, the people, need a real voice so that we can start deciding what's right and wrong, not in Washington, but in our own communities, because that is our piece of America. And once you do that, you know, I look at this once again as cancer. What you've got to do when cancer becomes systemic is you have to cut off its nourishment. And what we're doing is we're voluntarily sending this money to the top that's feeding this thing that's killing
exactly.
us. And that's why we exactly. all need a real voice, and we have to take advantage of the communication technology that, you know, I mean, this is a miracle.
Oh, no,
you know,
I agree with you. No, sir, I agree with you. Right now, there is no need for armed force. I think it's possible that the information sources can rectify this. I have not lost hope in it. That's what I would prefer to see occur. But again, in the back of my mind, I'm continually dismayed by this utter, complete, total inaction for half a decade now. Half a decade. Nothing.
But the question I'm saying is,
I think we need to consider everything at this point, because I think this is just singularly unprecedented.
I think the American people have had it, but they just don't know what to do. And we can pick up a weapon, but we can also have a weapon that doesn't shoot. The weapon can be our voices, the technology.
Well, let's do that first. I don't think we should take anything off the table given this kind of corruption that I never thought I would see anything like what's going on right now in my country. I never thought.
Right.
And so that means perhaps we will have to consider things we have never considered before.
Sarge, remember, you know, before Germany turned into Nazi Germany, it was a beautiful place. And the thing is what they did was they used violence to get what they wanted. Now, you know, and I know you're not an advocate of violence, but I'm saying that the American people have had it. Everybody that I know, pretty much, unless they're politicians or lawyers or the media is part of the system, and I think they've had it, but they don't know what to do. That's why we have to drop the tools into their laps of communication so that we can start doing the things that, like they did in Colorado, for example. They knew that the federal government says that marijuana is illegal, but they said, wait a minute, let's give this issue to the people and see what the people say. Well, the people voted on it. And guess what's legal in Colorado now? They are doing it from the ground up, and they're doing it the right way, the nonviolent way. You don't want a violent revolution because, remember, a revolution is one complete turn, and you're right back where you started, and that's what we had in America.
Actually, what we'd be doing is a counter-revolution. We've had the revolution. We just didn't know what was going on.
We've been subverted by revolutionary
elements, and they did it with a smiley face, fascist sort of looking on the face. Oh, we're here for your good. We're here working on behalf of your men. The revolution's already occurred. We need to strike a counter-revolution.
Well, think of this as an...
Well, let me interject for a minute. We're running short on time. I want to thank Sarge for his questions and comments. You've made some very good points, Sarge. And I agree. You know, First Amendment first, and if that doesn't work, if they draw the line in the sand and make a decision, and we have to come together to do that.
Let's take nothing off the table.
That's right. I agree. Thank you so much, Sarge, for your comments and questions. You have a good night.
You too. Goodbye.
Now, before we wrap it up, I'd like to know if David and Mark would have any comments or questions for each other.
I would first like to comment on what Sarge was talking about. You know, we talk about technology, we talk about the First Amendment right, we talk about communication, but you know what? This government has already become tyrannical. They really have, because of the crimes they've... And I think that the only avenue that we have if the federal courts do not act on this is for everyone to become armed and to make the protest upon Washington. You know, if we had a protest in Washington and everyone that went to Washington was armed, it would be a different protest.
Right. Well, we had somebody try that on the 4th of July, Adam Kokesh. I don't know if you ever heard of him. He did a YouTube video and went to Washington, D.C. armed. He was going to have a march, but he decided not to put everybody else, you know, in harm's way. So he did the YouTube video and cocked his gun, and he spent months in jail for that. And he's still fighting that.
That's why you have to do it from the ground up. That's why you need a plan that empowers people from the ground up.
But people aren't empowered. People don't, you know, people don't care about this subject. You talk to 10 people, and 9 people will say, who cares? Who cares about whether Obama was born in the U.S. or not? This is how
right,
people
we have
are.
A, right, we have a lot of apathy in this country. That is for sure.
I think even if Obama wasn't sitting in that seat, you'd still have the same top-down system. And top-down systems benefit the people at the top. If you look at corporations today, they're basically top-down systems. You know what the top of the corporation gets? He gets his check for $50 million. You know what the workers get? They get their jobs handed to slaves in other countries.
But
top-down,
sir,
this has always been the way it is.
Sir, it is important. This is treason. It is important.
I understand that.
To take this man
that.
Out of office.
Okay,
let's move on. Mark and David, did you have any questions or comments for each other before we start wrapping up the show?
No, I got to run, but it's been an honor and a pleasure to visit with you. I think he's absolutely right. We got to use the Internet. We got to use our communication. We got to use this First Amendment. So, I you know, God bless you guys. Pursue the truth. Fight for the truth as you see fit in your heart of hearts, and I will do the same.
You
Thank
too,
you
David.
Thank you so much for being on the show, David. Thanks for coming
on.
Nice
to be with you, Dave.
Yeah, take care, guys. God bless.
You too. Okay, Mark, did you want to tell everybody how they can get a hold of you? Do you have a website? Well, I know you have a website. I was on it today. But
yeah, they can go to MarkMcFarland.com. Yes, they can go to MarkMcFarland.com.
Okay.
And they can look at our platform. But, you know, I think there's a lot of misconceptions about, you know, what we can do as Americans. And when a government becomes this big, when we have a federal juggernaut that we have right now that is mandating health care upon the states, that they're lying about the executive who is in office and whether he was born in this country or not, then the people really have to stand up. And I think our Second Amendment right is more important than the First Amendment right at this point.
Well, if we don't have the Second Amendment, we definitely won't have the First.
Right, but do you really have the First Amendment? Because the media controls what people say.
That's why we need our own media. That's why community by community, you have to have your own media. And we can have a better media than we've ever had before because it can now be interactive. It's not only the information going out, but after that information goes out, what do we do with the information? We sit there, we're depressed. What do we do with it? Well, now with this, the new technology that we have, we can start responding to these issues by voting on these issues so that our representatives can truly start representing what we the people want as opposed to us representing what they want. You know, what we now have is a tail wagging the dog. I think what we need to do is use the technology so that that dog can wag his tail. And, you know, when I think about violence in America, you can just turn on TV right now and see what's going on in the Ukraine. They're using violence. They're trying to take back their communities and their country, and you can turn it on and see what's going on in the Middle East. I don't think we want that. I think America's smarter than that. And all we've got to do is understand. First, you have to understand the system, and most people don't take the time to understand the system and how the system works. Once again, top-down systems benefit the people at the top. That's what they developed 235 years ago without the communication technology that we now have access to. We live in an entirely different world than when this system was started. And what we've got to do is...
Well, one of the comments from the chat room is from David Small, who says we need to go back to paper ballots with purple inkwells.
To vote for people to think for.
And Ruth, my screen caller, agrees.
I think that's a very good idea. This is Mark. I think it's a very good idea because with a paper ballot, there's something that you can count. When you have a computerized system,
Let me tell you something.
When it comes to technology, first of all, technology saved my life. I had cancer, and it saved my life in that respect. But also, this morning, I had to pay my Comcast bill. And, you know, I picked up my cell phone, and I pushed four buttons, and they technologically took money out of my account and put it in their account accurately. Now, if they can take my money, can't they take my voice accurately? I pushed four buttons on my cell phone.
We're talking about a bill compared to voting. And I don't trust when I go into a voting booth that a machine is going to count that and that there will be an accurate detail of that. Now,
well, we
if I can see my paper ballot.
Voter fraud.
Well, we live in the 21st century. You don't. I mean, you get on airplanes, don't you, or driving your car?
I don't.
It's all computer.
No.
I mean,
I don't.
I'm with you, Mark.
No, I don't get on an
airplane.
No, sir, I don't get on an airplane.
How do you drive a car?
I drive a car, but I don't get on an airplane.
Oh, but you do drive a car, and it's controlled by computers.
There's probably
it's got more computer technology than they had when the man landed on the moon. I mean,
okay.
This is the world that we live in. They do the inkwell thing over in the Middle East, and it's not working out real well for them.
Okay.
They dip their finger in ink.
Let's go ahead and save this for another show because we only have a couple minutes left. Mark, do you want to tell everybody about your website and anything else you'd like to comment on before we end?
So they can freely go to the website, markmcfarland.com, and look at the platform. This issue with the birth certificate, I think that it's very critical to the state of this country. We cannot have a man in office, the top office in the country, who is not a natural-born citizen.
I agree. I think that's the most important issue going on right now.
Because what is the agenda? What is the agenda behind this? Where does his religious allegiances? Where are his political allegiances? People need to start questioning this.
Right.
He's definitely propped up.
I know.
He's propped.
That is correct, Mark. And I want to thank you so much for being on the show tonight. It was great talking to you. Thank you for coming on. David, did you want to tell everybody where they can get a hold of you before we end the show?
Yeah, thanks, Mona, and thanks for everything you do, Mona, seriously.
Oh, thank you for coming on.
You're a great patriot, and, you really care about this country. And, our information is at onevoicenow.org, onevoicenow.org. And the plan is on there to put the technology in your community and let you, the people, start taking back your piece of America. You know, politicians aren't going to do it for you. You've got to do it for yourself. Everybody's looking for that one person that's going to ride into town on that white horse with the white hat, and he's going to take care of all the bad guys. Well, you've got to do it, but you can do it one of two ways. You can do it through violence, or you can do it through peace. I believe that your voice is the way to do it. So I hope you check it out, and I hope you like it.
Well, thank you, David. We'll talk to you later.
Okay, Mona, thank you.
It was a great show. Thank you. And I'd like to wrap up the show by thanking everybody. BerthaReport.com, Sharon Rondeau with the email, post email. and the listeners, Mike Boland with Where's Obama's Birth Certificate.com. Go on the website and check it out. And everybody take care, and see you next time.
Business that you didn't build, that somebody else made that happen.